So what are you supposed to do between each Engadget podcast? Wait in silence? I'm Matt Smith, and every morning I walk through the day's biggest tech stories. It's short, relevant, and ready for listening whenever you wake up. Find Engadget Morning Edition wherever you find your podcasts, or ask your smart speaker for the latest news from Engadget.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Engadget podcast. I'm reviews editor Sherlyn Lowe, and my usual co-host Devendra is out being busy. So joining me this time is guest co-host all the way from the UK, UK Bureau Chief Matt Smith. Hello.
Hello, how are you doing?
Wow, you sound so nice when you said hello. This is not the usual Matt gentle. That I know. Very gentle, like, very kind.
I'm just well practiced from too many podcasts now, so my voice is kind of softened over the years.
It's very nice. As always, if you're liking the show, please subscribe to us on your podcast platform of choice. Leave us a rating and review on iTunes because that will really help us. And then if you have any more thoughts, send us an email to podcast@engadget.com. We also have a nifty forum that you can go over to the Engadget website where this podcast episode is hosted and look for it there. So not a lot of people, including Engadget people, know this, but Matt and I actually met before I started working at Engadget, and it was a very strange experience.
Come on, Sherlyn, let's be honest, you know, we were both young, we were in Taiwan, the weather was hot. I recall about 7 p.m. it started raining gently.
Why are you making people think things? What happened? Actually,
I want people
facts.
To feel things.
I want people to feel things too, but I want people to get the facts. I was working for another publication, I think it was Laptop Magazine, and I was at Taiwan covering Computex, and Matt was there for Engadget. And we were at the ASUS press conference waiting outside in the waiting room, and I knew Dana, my current boss, back then already. And so I was going over to say hi. Matt was next to her, I think, right? Am I remembering this right? We might have met in the press room, actually. But you like, were
the time I genuinely remember meeting you properly was when we all went out for dinner. But you deny ever doing that.
When did we go out for dinner?
Like your boss and then Dana and me, maybe someone else, all went out for like some kind of dim sum-y noodly thing. You were
anyhow,
like working away like a nerd.
Oh, I remember. That's why I don't remember the dinner, is because I blacked out and was working on my.
I thought you were like an intern or something. I don't know.
I was probably just freshly promoted from being an intern at Laptop. But anyway, we have history, and it was nice to afterwards come to Engadget and be like, I was very, I think, standoffish, and I can be that way a lot with people I don't know.
I think we first bonded over, we went for not great Mexican food. We had some sangria. You had one glass, got way too drunk too quickly, and started acting belligerent towards our deputy head of video.
Oh, this was Etsy. That really was how we first.
That's why we bonded, though.
That was when you bonded with me. I didn't remember
any of that
being present. I was, yeah. Anyway, we go back.
We go back but a long time. We have like equal levels of blackmail material on
we
each
do.
Other.
We do. It's fun. But anyway, so Matt has been spending time with the OnePlus Nord lately, which just got announced this Tuesday, I believe. And this phone has been hyped. It's like, it's as if it's OnePlus's return to affordable again. But Matt, take it away.
So yeah, like, a lot of the details for this phone have been, you know, drip-fed to us over the last month or two. Like, to be honest, OnePlus hasn't been able to shut up about this phone. But I guess it's because it's a big deal for them. You know, it hits in under that sub-$500 category. It has, like, a laundry list of flagship specs despite that price. So we're talking 5G. We're talking 48-megapixel camera sensor, a 6.4-inch screen that also runs at 90 hertz. That's like a very slick feature for a phone this cheap. What other cool things does it have? I mean, those are the main take-home bullet points.
Is 5G coverage in the UK like just a lot, like good now or no?
It's still on its way. I feel like most people are still on 4G. Mm. I mean, we're lucky we're an island nation, so it really doesn't take long to cover the whole country. But that said, we still have like four major phone carriers, if not more. So everyone's still kind of cutting up the nation to their own, you know, 5G areas.
I definitely think that like this is OnePlus kind of going back to its roots, right? Because when OnePlus again first came out with the OnePlus One, it was like this, it was billed as this like flagship killer. It was like taking on the likes of the Samsung Galaxies, the Apple iPhones, but at a, like half the price, which is what the Nord is doing. And I think people were understandably hype about it. And then OnePlus had been moving away from the affordable lineup for a bit. Like, they used to like, so the OnePlus 7 and the 6 and the 8, these flagship lines all got progressively more expensive. And I believe
it's only it's only quite recently with the OnePlus 8 Pro, I think, that they got to having them good again. I feel, you know, it's my opinion, but I think like the 6, 7, 8 run, you know, they've been, they haven't been great, and they've been a lot of money for a OnePlus phone.
How dare you? How dare you even?
Sorry to
the
be
OnePlus
contrarian.
Fans are going to come to, for you. I think I agree with you, though. I think that because we've expected OnePlus, I mean, OnePlus, again, has done a good job, right? It has been really good. And that's why I think we have high expectations for them. But yeah, the 6, 7, 8, they've just had like underwhelming cameras in general, I think. The build has been improving. The software is always very clean. And so those are things to like about OnePlus. But yeah, the, I think cameras are a very important thing for most smartphone users. What do you think about the Nord's cameras?
So yeah, we're in this weird middle ground between the embargo I agreed on the hands-on and the embargo I agreed for the review. So I think I'll just take some middle ground and like, on first impressions, the camera, you know, the camera's pretty good. I'd say it sits between the 8 and the 8 Pro. And remember, the OnePlus 8 is a more expensive phone. So that's good going. It's a weird combination of sensors that, again, sits it between the OnePlus 8 and the OnePlus 8 Pro. But yeah, like that's a big old sensor, 48 megapixel primary sensor. And that means you get like a kind of, you know, cropping zoom, which is, you know, kind of, the, you know, par for the course these days.
Yeah.
But it's good to see. You know, I'm not going to complain
like,
about it.
I hear a lot on Twitter. Again, a lot of my knowledge about this phone comes from Twitter because I follow all the Android people. And a lot of people were saying that, I think it was the Nord that proves that like macro cameras don't need to be high res or something like that. There's a, is there a macro camera on here?
There is. There's another like 2 megapixel macro camera.
Yeah, because it's so little megapixels.
Yeah, but I so don't get the point of it. Like, it's, you have to like intentionally tap it on. And so to be honest, half the time I was just using the camera and getting close up with the main sensor and not even bothering with the macro one. I don't, like, I feel like the pictures you get out of it, they're still relatively noisy. They're not, you know, obviously they're not very detailed. I don't quite get it. It seems like a kind of, oh, let's just throw in another sensor so it looks like,
we've
like
done
a proper
something.
Flagship phone.
Yeah. I mean, understanding that this is like their sub $500 US device, I'm not going to ask for like a very expensive macro lens or something here.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm not expecting 5x zoom. Like I'm saying, 2x zoom at this price is absolutely adequate.
Right.
I think the main thing is just having that primary camera that can take decent photos in low light. And again, we're pretending
yeah, we don't know.
I'm
yeah, we'll wait till your review
embargoes.
Comes out. Yeah, we'll
yeah,
wait
right?
till your
but
review comes
so
out.
So far, so good is how I'm putting it. Yeah.
We, I mean, you know, people who are curious about Matt's thoughts so far can obviously go check out the hands-on already live on the site or wait for the review to come out, which should be sometime
soon.
Next week, I'm hoping.
Yes. Yes, fingers crossed if I don't screw
fingers
up.
Fingers crossed. But to be clear, to those of you listening from the US, this phone's not coming to the US, it seems.
No. So yeah, like there's no plans for a US launch yet. And like I just mentioned earlier, like if the OnePlus 8, which is out in the US, I recall, if the OnePlus 8 is out there, this phone just kind of, it's better in a lot of ways and it's a fraction of the price. I imagine it's kind of one of these US carriers hold all the power situations where a cheap phone that kind of blows more expensive devices out of the water, it's just kind of undesirable for certain players.
Yeah, I didn't think of it that way, but we were having a conversation about this when we were planning this episode, and you know, our producer Ben was like, why do you think it's not coming to the US? And I was like, yeah, in the US the carriers hold all the power, and they consistently subsidize the high-end flagships, right? Like, and also they have equipment installment plans that kind of make it seem like you're getting a very high-end phone for a cheap monthly fee. So they really don't want a lot of competition from that. But they do have mid-range phones from the likes of Samsung, LG, Motorola. They have all these, like, you know, cheaper phones.
I mean, arguably the current mid-range champ, I'd say, is the Pixel 3a, and that's out in the US, isn't it?
I mean, yeah, exactly. I love that. So what I think it came down to was that actually people have more faith in brands like Samsung and Google and Apple. So the iPhone SE is also like a cheaper phone. So what I think this pure speculation, is that, like, yeah, carriers are probably not as confident in OnePlus when it comes to mid-range devices. In fact, I think the OnePlus 8 was the first time possibly that the OnePlus flagship was actually on a carrier like Verizon. I think it was previously announced that they had carrier partnerships with other of their flagship devices, but for Verizon, like one of the biggest, and to be clear, Verizon is our parent company, but they have no control over editorial content.
And they don't pay for my phone contract, I'll tell you that much.
Same. But yeah, that is a, I think that was a big deal for OnePlus. And obviously they have to keep working hard to convince carriers and users that, you know, there's no reason to suspect them. Which we don't know. But I'm curious, you're in the UK. What's the impression of OnePlus like over there?
I think it's quite similar across the board. Although there's availability of the OnePlus in shops here because we have a culture of buying phones like off plan, let's say. Like you buy it without a phone plan and then just stick in your SIM and carry on existing plan. But I think it's kind of a tech website reading kind of phone, like that kind of user. And so, yeah, that's absolutely fine. I mean, it's the kind of people that will buy phones on the regular. I'm more intrigued to see, you know, who's going to buy this phone. Isn't there, irrespective of how decent this phone performs in the end, people will still go for the most expensive, quote unquote, flagship device, right?
Yeah. I mean, I've been looking at these mid-range phones that have been coming out. Like we said, the Pixel 3a, which, by the way, is old as hell. We really want...
Still good, though. It's still good.
God, I think... Yeah, well, but we've been waiting for this Phantom Pixel 4a forever. Anyway, there's the 3a, the iPhone SE... The Galaxy A51,
the whole Galaxy A series, Moto, Nokia even here and there.
Right, you guys have more over there.
Yeah, we have loads of them. A lot of them are absolutely terrible. But you can probably circle around the ones that are the best. Like, you know, it's reliable phone makers for the best part. But OnePlus, I'd argue, you know, it would fit in there.
Yeah, I think the OnePlus fits in there. But my point is that, like you were saying, how many people are going to buy the mid-range versus the high-end phone? It depends. I think it boils down to performance and features. And for me, like, I considered if I wanted to get a mid-range phone, you know? And if we talk about, like, just if we nerd out about mid-range phones for a second, right? The reason sometimes that they're cheaper is because, yeah, sure, they, you know, most of the time the money savings come from things like the processor and the camera. Yeah. I think that most other specs, you can find that manufacturers are able to have them on par with high-end flagships. And are you willing to live with a camera that's not as good as the latest iPhone? I think most people could be. I think as long as the camera, the photos are good, people are not going to care if I can zoom like 5 times in. But the processor is, I think, where... it's a little bit iffy. It's hard to say long-term performance, how a processor holds up. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why the 3A was so good. It's because it used a cheaper processor. I think it was a 630 or 670 Snapdragon 6 something. And then, but it had software that was tuned to make the most and the best of that, you know, processor and make the whole system feel like it was flying. And that's why we liked it so much.
Yeah. So yeah, like you, I'm really excited for the 4A. Like the 3A was my token... person asked me what phone they want to get. Token, they might read Engadget only because I work there type of person.
Oh, I would always be like,
family and friends that really don't care about my opinion, but I give it to them anyway. And I was always
you give me
them,
your
like,
opinion too.
Yep, and you tell me like shut it. Up too.
Yeah, yep. I do, yeah.
And I tell them all, like, buy the Pixel 3a. Like, it's cheap. It often goes on sale. That, you know, this camera, A, it takes incredible photos, but B... even if you're terrible at smartphone photography, it will take amazing photos.
Yes. And that's what I like about Google. But again, we can keep talking about the Pixel rumored 4A forever all that. I know. So wait, any last thoughts about the OnePlus Nord, Matt? Or any like more thoughts on it?
Any more thoughts on it?
What about those colors, by the way?
I love the colors. I'm pro interesting phone colors.
You must love Huawei.
Yeah, I do like the colors. I like they've kind of chilled out now. A few of them for a while just look like an oil stain on the road. So they've kind of, you know, circled them around genuine color palettes, which I appreciate a bit more. But yeah, like this, the Nord, I've got it here, so Sherlyn can see it, but dear listener can't. But look at it. It's a cute little palette. It's like a cyan sky blue baby. And it's got that pearlescent, translucent vibe to it. I mean, it's cute. It's a cute giant phone.
Yeah. It's, what is it, 6.4 inch screen again, you said? Yeah. What's like, the res? Yeah.
It like, well, this is an SE, but.
Holy, wow.
This is not really good podcast content because I'm literally showing Sherlyn the sizes of phones on our webcams. But believe me, it's much bigger than the SE.
If you do want to see these pictures of the phone, definitely go over to Engadget.com. But I will say I'm impressed with OnePlus's like finishes overall, because the 8 had this like rainbow pearlescent finish as well, and I thought that was very pretty. But sorry to distract. My final thoughts
on the Nord so far, at least, is
like
it's an issue of compromises. We've touched on this a few times, and I think you just have to go through the shopping list of high spec features you're willing to part with to save hundreds of dollars, if only.
So
let's do a pop quiz, right? Yes. I'll say a feature. You say, if you like something, toot it. If you can get rid of it on a phone and you're happy to buy it, you're booting it.
Okay. Yes, I get it.
Okay, ready? Fingers on buzzers. Yes.
Very.
Okay, high-spec camera.
Toot it.
Okay, good. I've got to remember things now. IP ratings, water protection.
Toot it.
Interesting. For the note, the Nord doesn't have that. Wireless charging.
Boot it.
Interesting. The Nord doesn't have wireless charging.
Yeah, I don't care about that.
Fast charging.
Toot it.
Interesting. Giant battery.
What's that? Batoot it. Can I? Batoot it. Boot it.
Boot it. Okay, cool. And big screen.
Boot it.
Interesting.
Boot it.
I think that might be my major issue with it. It's like the 11 Pro Max, the size of this OnePlus.
The iPhone 11 Pro Max.
Yeah. It's big. It's a little bit too big for me, but big also screams flagship. So
yeah,
I feel like a lot of the design decisions made here were to kind of give it the aura of a top of the range phone. That's why you have so many camera sensors. That's why you have a big screen. Mm-hmm. That's why you have the 90 hertz refresh rate.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's not a bad thing, but yeah, I think that's the philosophy behind some of these decisions.
It sounds like we're going to have to wait for your full review to have a more clear sense of where you really stand with this phone, but it does sound like you're somewhat conflicted as well. I think
my emotions.
Well, for everyone else who's listening, if you have any thoughts so far on the OnePlus Nord and whether or not you're going to get a mid-range phone versus a high-end phone, please send us your thoughts to podcast@engadget.com. So OnePlus didn't just announce or launch the OnePlus Nord. It also unveiled OnePlus Buds, these like $79 true wireless earbuds. We also were able to get hands-on with some units before the launch. And Billy Steele, who's been on the show before, our audio expert, already published his hands-on, is on the site if you want to go see it. But OnePlus was also kind enough to, I think, send you a set, Matt, right?
Yes, I also got sent a pair, but I didn't get the striking color option.
No, you didn't get the Fisher Price buds.
Yeah, right. So let's start with the basics. These are, you know, OnePlus's first true wireless buds, and they ring in at only $79. So that's super, super cheap.
Mm-hmm. And they're coming to the US.
And they are coming to the US, quite importantly.
Nice.
Unfortunately, they're not great.
Oh, I take back my nice then.
Yeah, like the price is nice. But yeah, they're not. They're really rather tinny. I'd argue even like the original Apple AirPods had a better sound quality than these. They don't have silicon tips, so then they kind of just sit in your ear. But Sherlyn, if I recall, that you prefer that kind of earbud, right?
Yeah, I like the AirPods style where they have the stick sticking out a little bit, because even though I don't need the... I mean, even though I would like a nice noise seal to just keep out some sound, I just think it's more comfortable to not have something sticking into my ear canal. And this design looks a bit like that. I don't think it pushes as far into the canal. It looks like it has a round drum sticking out a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't go in your ear, Sherlyn. Come on.
Hey, I have a shallow ear canal, okay?
Okay. I don't know. I mean, this is like the opposite part of the equation when going too cheap. you lose too much. At least that's my opinion on them. Like, they sound quite tinny. They let a lot of ambient noise inside. There's no active noise cancellation, perhaps, obviously, at this price. They're just kind of a bit meh. Like, the battery lasts forever, and, you know, you can charge them in the little case. But, yeah, there's not enough to appeal. And also, at a point where everyone is selling true wireless buds, I'm not sure these are gonna... These aren't exactly nailing the spec, I don't think.
I will say, like, this isn't OnePlus's first foray into earbuds, right? They've made the Bullets wireless earbuds before that were more like a necklace style. I've had those, and those were, you know, the sound quality was fine. I mean, I wish they were a little bit louder, a bit more bassy. But, you know, for people who like necklace buds, those are good. Necklace buds meaning they're, like, the buds are connected to each other with a wire, and they hang around your neck, but they're not connected to your phone. And, I mean... They were fine. They magnetically snapped to each other, those buds. And so, for whatever reason, I can't tell you really. And I think they had a similar fit where they didn't really have... They didn't go as far into the ear canal as existing models do. But yeah, OnePlus seems to still be struggling, I think, with making true wireless earbuds. I don't know.
Yeah, like, I remember I didn't have the Bullets, but I had Huawei's spin on them, which is very similar, but I don't think the OnePlus did this. The Huawei Bullets, but with a different name, you could actually plug in them into the phone to charge them, which was, like, pretty sweet. You could, like, take away part of the cable and plug it into any USB-C port to charge them.
Huawei's very good at doing this sort of reverse charging thing, I think.
They love charging things. They just love charging things.
I like the Huawei Buds. I like them. I think you and I checked them out together one IFA, and they actually did, like, some sort of makeshift noise cancellation, even if they were open ear style. They weren't, like, they were similar to the AirPods style earbuds and don't, like, completely block out your ear canal, but they still did some sort of noise cancellation. I like them, except for their touch controls are a little sensitive. Now, the $79 OnePlus Buds don't have touch controls, do they?
They have very rudimentary ones.
Limited ones.
I have to, like, yeah, I need to look it up again, but I think...
Oh, it's okay.
There's, a, like, a double tap to pause feature, and this is why. So I was talking to Billy Steele, one of our senior news editors at Engadget, and he's been testing them. He is, like, our pods guy. Our AirPods, our Buds ear guy. He just has amazing ears.
He's an expert.
And he's like, hey, Matt, like, you have a OnePlus phone. Do all these weird features work with it? Because there's a few kind of software features if you have a OnePlus phone and these buds. Unfortunately, that final software didn't reach it to us by the time we had to publish our impressions story. So we don't know. I don't know. Billy doesn't know. No one knows. But there's options like an extra bass setting, more EQ adjustments, even Dolby Atmos support, apparently.
Okay.
And the ability to customize said touch controls. But yeah, we haven't been able to try those yet. So
I guess it sounds like maybe for most people who are just looking for wireless earbuds, maybe hold off on these. And then if you're buying a OnePlus phone, they might be a good accessory with them.
This isn't really for US folks, but I'd imagine everywhere else that they're selling the Nord phone, I'd assume if you maybe put in a pre-order or bought the phone on the day, you might get a pair with them or something like that. That seems like a no-brainer to me.
All right, so OnePlus wasn't the only company to launch anything this week. There were a lot of other Xiaomi, Asus, Lenovo, and coincidentally all in China. So Xiaomi had an event where it launched a bunch of products across its ecosystem this week, including the Mi Smart Band 5 global launch, an e-scooter, wireless earbuds as well, and the Curve gaming display. Now, I think we were talking about Xiaomi and them being a kind of fascinating, unique company. And I was talking to our producer, Ben, and we were like, what's a good metaphor for them? So Xiaomi, like, we landed on this. I don't know if it works for someone in the UK, but Matt, would you understand if I told you this? So Xiaomi is, like, not Apple, it's not Samsung. It's more like, and it's not Walmart, right, where the goods are cheap and sometimes not so great. It's more like Target. It's more like cheap and yet with some quality. It's the Target of Asia.
But isn't Target just someone that goes to Target and thinks it's fancy?
Right, yeah, but Target is this, like, stop it, Matt. Target is the better Walmart. Target is relatively cheap and still somewhat decent, maybe.
I feel like you don't even believe in this dialogue anymore, Sherlyn.
I just want to say that Xiaomi used to be known for ripping off iPhone designs, and now they're doing some interesting things on their own. That's all I want to say right now.
I mean, I love when it's the I love it when it's a tech company that is willing to make phones alongside e-scooters, alongside rice cookers, alongside smart lighting. Like,
oh God,
it's kind
of
bonkers. Like, they have a flagship store near me in London, and I often just peer in just to, you know, see what kind of absolute scattergun approach to technology they have.
Yeah, it feels a little all over the place, and you know, the way they operate is also strange, because they have the Xiaomi, the Mi Note, the Redmi phones that all are made by them, but when it comes to a lot of their other products, like the ones that we've been mentioning, and including the wearables, they're made by companies that Xiaomi invests in. So not even like really themselves, but like companies they have minor stakes in sometimes, or major stakes in. So, for example, the Mi Band 5, it's actually made, I think, by Huami, who makes Amazfit watches that you see going for really cheap on Amazon over here in the US. The Mi Band 5 was launched in China about a couple of weeks ago. And I mean, it was very impressive. It had a lot of good features for just $32, but was never going to come to the US. I mean, it was only in China. And it's $32, you're going to get like a continuous heart rate monitor up to
$32.
$32, yeah. It was 229 yuan. Right. And so you would get like a 1.1-inch color touchscreen, water resistance, sleep tracking, auto workout detection for certain, like for 11 workouts, including yoga, which is important to me. So a lot of good stuff for just that amount of money. And so when this week they announced, alongside their slew of products, they announced that the Mi Smart Band 5, which is a global variant, was going to be available in Europe and also other parts of the world, assuming, we were pretty excited. I mean, like, for you over in the UK and Europe, you are going to be able to buy this guy for 39 euros.
That's so cheap.
That is so
ridiculous.
Cheap. Because like, consider what we have in the US. We have Fitbit and Garmin. And Fitbit's cheapest is the Inspire, which starts at $70. And for that price, it does not have a heart rate sensor.
It's just a tracker, pretty much, isn't it? Isn't it just a glorified tracker?
Yeah, a steps tracker. And then, like, it's on sale right now, so it starts at $50. So it's, like, a little less unappetizing.
How old is that model?
God,
at this
it's
point
so
as well.
Old too. Yeah, like the last time Fitbit like updated a tracker style device was the Charge 4, I believe, but I could be wrong. And then Garmin, which also, you know, is one of the bigger brands here, their cheapest also starts at about $70 or $80, and it's this janky looking thing that looks like it's from 2013. It's got a tiny thumb sized screen that's not even a touch screen. And then it looks like, it just looks really, really old. And then it's got this big button on the face because it's not a touchscreen. It doesn't have a heart rate monitor either. So Xiaomi's doing very interesting stuff. I know that people are concerned about products from China, you know? Mm-hmm. And I can't say that I know all too much about whether or not Xiaomi is, like, I guess, I don't know, in cahoots with their government. I don't think so. They have like, openly said that they're not. But I understand that, like, a lot of people around the world have concerns. Is Xiaomi, like, a well-respected brand in the UK, Matt?
I think it's one of those ones that kind of flies under the radar. I'm sure there's lots of people with Xiaomi phones in the UK, but I don't think they have that much of a presence. It's very, I don't think I've ever seen advertising in mainstream newspapers or, like, on bus sidings or the rest of it. But like I said, they have, like, these flagship stores dotted around London to kind of sell this kind of weird array of devices. But I think that might be more of a international play than it is a concerted effort to break the UK.
Yeah, I think they're struggling outside of China. I think they're doing very well inside China because, you know, people there don't have like trust issues with them, I don't think. But I mean I've looked at some of their products and they look so interesting. Like, I really want that rice cooker. I don't care if you're telling China how many bowls of rice I cook a week, you know what I mean? Like,
I was gonna say the same thing. Like, even if they were using this data from a fitness tracker for nefarious uses, I'm not sure how much me avoiding running for a whole week is going to help them, you know, destroy the British government. I don't think it's going to help them much.
I know that the privacy concern, like people were very concerned about privacy. You're like, no, it's just more about what it can glean from that. Like it could use this as a backdoor into your home network. I don't know, whatever. I'm not saying I don't care, and I'm not saying I don't trust. I'm just saying that, like, I don't have, like, I, again, I'm not.
You haven't got much to lose.
Valuable a person. Yeah, like, really not. But yeah, no, in addition to the rice cooker, the other thing that I know they make that makes me very intrigued is they have, like, these portable battery chargers for your phone, and, like, that are also like a compact mirror for like touching up your makeup, I guess, when you're out, and like a ring light mirror. And I was like, oh, hell yeah, give me that. And it feels like they are starting to make devices for women, tech device, like tech gadgets for women. And I'm like, that marry like worlds that are often not like combined. So that's what I'm interested in, and interested in seeing more of just in tech in general.
Yeah, like it has a bit of like a Panasonic vibe to them, doesn't it? Where they're kind of hitting beauty goods and home goods and stuff, and that's not a bad approach to make, you know.
Yeah,
like, but as phones slow down and they get a bit more, you know, iterative, like, why not get a fancy new rice cooker?
Yeah, get something nice, treat yourself. I will. Speaking of China and all of the companies that are producing stuff there that may or may not ever come to the US, we had Asus this week announced the ROG 3 phone. This is a gaming-centric phone, follows up the ROG Phone 2. By the way, ROG stands for Republic of Gamers. That's like Asus's gaming sub-brand, and it's fairly like fairly well-known and represented in the mobile gaming world, right? Or gaming world. Competitive.
Yeah, like for PCs and laptops, it's kind of a well-regarded thing. You'd say ROG more than you'd say Asus,
Yeah, I mean, at least when it comes to that gaming brand. So ROG 3 was announced, and it's got some insane specs. It's got like a 144 hertz refresh rate screen with a, I think, 240 hertz touch sampling rate. And basically for people who game, that's a big deal because it means you can, you know, perform faster. The response time is like shorter. I'm struggling to explain this to like a non-gaming person, but you are a good gamer. Matt, you probably have better ways of explaining this.
Faint praise indeed. Yeah, I'm not a huge mobile gamer, but I've played games, you know. I get high. I rock the high scores.
Do you even PUBG?
Do you even PUBG? Not anymore. Or Fortnite? I've moved on from that. Oh. I mean, that's the interesting thing with a lot of these gaming phones, right, is you need the games to be compatible with these hardware features. But like, Asus is actually, they say they have over 100 games that now support this kind of super speedy 144 hertz screen. And they're games you might have heard of, Dead Cells, Slam Dunk, and there's even a Rockman game, which is Mega Man everywhere else. So these are like major games that have compatibility with this. And these are the kind of, like Dead Cells and Mega Man are both kind of very slick, cartoony, 2D platform type games. So I bet they would look buttery smooth on these screens.
But what are, like, so I don't know if you are as like super caught up on the ROG 3. What are some of the other features that stand out about it?
I mean, there's a lot of similarities to the ROG Phone 2, and that's so you can use old peripherals with the new one. And I think that's, but barring, you know, they have a top of the range processor. I think it's the Snapdragon 865 Plus.
Yep, it is.
So that is like top of the end, right? So it's all the power.
Does it have, like, I remember, so I know that gaming phones are kind of niche still, and I think ROG is one of them, the Razer makes one, I can't really tell you off the top of my head who else makes them, Xiaomi, I think, has their Black Shark.
Yeah, I was going to mention Black Shark, yeah.
Yeah, so, hey, Xiaomi, it got their hands in everything. And Lenovo also this week announced its first gaming phone, the Lenovo Legion Duel, which uses
this
the same Snap.
Ridiculous. Yeah. Sorry to interrupt. It's ridiculous.
No, you're fine. I would love to hear more about why it's ridiculous, but just quickly, the Lenovo Legion phone uses the same Snapdragon 865 Plus that the Asus ROG 3 does. But what's so ridiculous about the Legion phone?
So, peak ridicularity is it has a camera that pops out the side of the thing. So you remember about, I don't know, 18 months ago where half the phones announced had a pop-up selfie camera. Yep. And it would pop out the top. It would either be like a shark fin or literally like a really weird like comedy robot eye. Like a
submarine periscope popping up. Yeah.
Nonsense. Yeah. So Lenovo thought, that's a good idea. Let's put it in a gaming phone, but put it on its side. So the idea is, it's almost like, judging by the renders, it looks like a webcam on your laptop, but it's for your phone. And I guess it means you can kind of, you know, do video calls while you shoot the baddies.
It's for Twitch streaming, but the mobile version.
Oh, I'm too old, aren't I, Sherlyn? Sorry. Of course it's for Twitch. It has, other very bizarre features. Like, there's a load of cameras. There's, a 64 megapixel main sensor, an ultra wide that goes to 120 degrees, which is again pretty darn wide.
Yeah, it's nice. Yeah,
and yeah, there's just a lot of power. Again, it's a gaming machine, so it has to have top of the range battery.
What's the processor size and resolution?
Oh god, this is like a spec sheet quiz. Don't worry, I got the size. Then. It's about 6.65, so that's huge. That is like one big old phone.
Oof. I mean, yeah. Look, okay, we can rag on these phones forever, but I mean, I guess, you know, good luck to Lenovo. Your first gaming phone sounds like it's at least, you know, unique. Gaming phones are not a huge thing here in the US, but they seem to be doing, you know, they seem to keep going over in Asia.
Yeah, I edited Richard Lai's story on the ROG Phone 3, and that was my question to him. He wrote the R kind of hands-on piece. Mm-hmm. And I was like, these must still be relevant because companies keep making them.
Yeah, yeah. There's a big market for it over in Asia. And I think we will see if it ever makes its way over here. We're starting to see mobile gaming start to take off in the US, but I'm not sure if it will really take off in the
US. I think once Microsoft's X Cloud, once Google Stadia, once whatever PlayStation plans, however it plans to evolve its kind of, you know, streaming cloud gaming service, then a lot of these phones, a lot of these peripherals will kind of take on a second lease. But again, if you're streaming the games, you don't need all this power. Like, spoilers for my OnePlus Nord review, and sorry to kind of swing us back around to that.
Full circle.
I can play Stadia on my OnePlus Nord effortlessly. There is no lag. It looks beautiful on the screen, and the screen's only 1080p.
Yeah.
It's smooth. Wow. Again, 90Hz screen helps, I guess. But I don't need a quote-unquote gaming phone to play Stadia, and I probably wouldn't to play xCloud either.
We'll have to wait till your full review. We'll have to wait till all these phones get fully reviewed to really know more. But right now, though, if you have any thoughts about the rise of gaming phones in other parts of the world or here in the US, send us your thoughts once again to podcast@engadget.com.
Yeah, especially if you own one. Tell me why? Like, why did you buy one? Tell me.
It's been a gadget heavy week for us here at Engadget. It's in the name. This might be an obvious question, but Matt, what have you been working on?
Well, I've been kind of talking all about it for the last half hour. But yeah, the OnePlus Nord, I'm putting it through its paces. Expect a review in its entirety very, very soon. How about you, Sherlyn? What's coming up?
So, I mean, I keep working on stuff that I can't talk about on this podcast. Longtime listeners will know and probably are frustrated. But today, the day that we're recording this show, my Comic-Con at home panel with the cast and creator of Amazon's Upload TV series goes live, or is going to happen at 5 p.m. Eastern. So by the time you listen to this podcast, it'll already have streamed and aired. But, you know, I'm sure you can always check it out on Amazon's Comic-Con at Home portal or just go look for the Comic-Con at Home slate. I also want to point out that Devendra's XPS 17 review is live. And as I predicted, he scored it somewhere above 85 and below 90. So I feel like he owes me something.
What kind of lame bet is that? Oh, God.
I mean, that's just Dev and XPS. So there's a lot coming up on Engadget. Make sure you stay tuned or check out the website for all of our work. Of course, it's not just work. It's also play in the midst of all this sweat, literal sweat right now dropping down my face. Matt, what do you do to relax?
Please stop. So what have I been doing that's not work? I recently picked up on launch day Ghost of Tsushima, which is on PlayStation 4. Ooh. And that's one very enjoyable game. You play a samurai that kind of goes dark and he kind of kills his baddies in a dishonorable way. I haven't finished it yet, so no spoilers. But so far, it's been very enjoyable. It's actually very relaxing. There's no kind
to kill things.
yeah, you do kill things, but between that, you just kind of meander across a Japanese, you know, landscape as maple leaves brush past you and you gallop across the shoreline, wondering about the, you know, the passing relevance of living this life.
That's right up your alley. That must really make you feel nostalgic for when you lived in Japan.
For when I was a samurai. Yeah.
No, you wish. So what else? But what else other than that, Matt? I know you and I, we talk about our secret glow up projects.
Yeah, right. Mine has not been going so well. I just keep kind of chopping and changing my workout gadgets of choice. I've gone through VR workouts, which I think you've tried, haven't you, Sherlyn? Yeah. What did you try in VR?
It's called Supernatural, and it got me incredibly sweaty, and my quads died. It was great.
A dance workout app, yeah?
Yeah, sort of to music, and you're whacking these, like, cones flying at you with these lightsabery things. It's fun. Okay. It's a lot of fun.
Sounds like a lot like Beat Saber, but...
It is basically Beat Saber, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I've been spending about, 2 weeks with Box VR, which is... I mean, the clue's in the name, it's boxing in VR. But I've been using it with the Oculus Quest, which is the kind of fancy, lightweight, really wireless. Yeah. It's a really good one. It's very crisp, very light, which is crucial, because sweating in a VR headset is absolutely disgusting.
Do you wear a mask? Do you wear a mask when you're using that
No, this is a loner one from the company behind the app, at least. They wiped it down, and I'm going to wipe it down.
You have to.
Yeah, please do, Matt. You absolutely stink.
Please, you're gross.
I'm actually on week 8 of Couch to 5K. Have you heard of Couch to 5K?
Good for you. Yeah, I have. I tried and gave up on week 1.5.
This is my 5th attempt.
Good luck. I am very proud of you, week 8.
Week 8, total? So it's getting there, but I still hate running. Like,
I hate running too.
Can you ask your readers just to tell me how to not hate running?
Pretend you're running from the Ghost of Tsushima.
Okay, sure.
Or to the Ghost of Tsushima.
I'm the Ghost of Tsushima.
Yeah. Pretend you're running to Japan. I don't know. Or running towards sushi. That motivates me.
How about you, Sherlyn? What are you doing? What are you interested in at the moment?
I want to recommend this while The Avengers is out. This docuseries on HBO Max called I'll Be Gone in the Dark. I can only say it when The Avengers is out because he would jump in and be like, I already recommended this to you, because I think he did. It's really good. I mean, it's about Michelle McNamara, this true crime blogger, writer, journalist, reporter. She wore many hats. And she basically was trying to hunt down and at the same time write about the Golden State Killer, who's like the most prolific serial rapist and also who murdered like about 12 people or 12 cases of murder. And the documentary is fascinating because Michelle was writing a book called I'll Be Gone in the Dark, and she sadly passed before she finished. She was very close to finishing it. So her husband, who by the way is comedian Patton Oswalt, finished the book for her, and they, you know, the docuseries is based off of that book. It's very intriguing. I think it's, as both someone who's interested in true crime and who is a journalist who sometimes investigates stories, I found it very relatable. I think that Michelle McNamara's determination and her, you know, her reporting was very inspirational. So if you're interested in true crime at all, this will be a great watch. If you're interested in the journalistic process, this will be... It's not as in-depth as something like Spotlight, but it gives you kind of a sense of what sometimes, you know, reporters do. I tried to look for the book afterwards, that Patton Oswalt published in Michelle McNamara's name after she passed. Obviously, it's on hold everywhere. I checked out all the digital libraries, like, I'm signed up to a few. And yeah, it's like 8 week old, 11 week old. So yeah, but it reminded me to recommend all of you, make sure to sign up for a digital library card. They're like much more widely available now because libraries are still closed here in the US. I don't know about over in the UK, Matt.
Yeah, like my flat block, actually, it sides onto a library and a community center, and it's still locked down.
Oh, well, there you go. Around the world, it seems like libraries might still be locked down. This is time, if you haven't already, to get a digital library card. It's pretty easy. Just go to your library, look up how to sign up for a digital card. I mean, in the US, it's based on your neighborhood and where you live. With a digital library card, though, by the way, you can also use this app called Canopy with a K. It's a video streaming service that allows you to access all these titles for free using your library card. You're just loaning out these videos, kind of old school style. So yeah, I got a lot of good recommendations for you. Meanwhile, Matt just telling you to play games and sweat. So, I don't know.
I think the healthiest combination is probably a bit of both.
A bit of everything.
Yes.
And that's it for our episode this week, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale Norton. Our outro music is by our very own Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Matt Smith online
on Twitter at @ThatMattSmith. That's Matt with one T. You can find me there.
And if you want to tell me all about the clues as to who certain unsolved mystery serial killer type people might be, you can hit me up on Twitter as well at Sherlyn Lowe. Email us your thoughts at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review on iTunes and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts, including Spotify.
You're looking tubby, Matt. What else are you doing?